Hello, everybody. It's Sam from Financial Samurai. And in this episode, we're going to talk about my first quarter 2018 investment update and outlook for stocks, bonds, real estate, and alternative investments. There's no more important time than now to pay attention to your investments. If you haven't seen what the stock market is doing, we went from up about 7.2% in January to down about 3.5% to 4% in the first quarter for about an 11% correction. That is a meaningful correction, which makes people worry and wonder what's going on in the future, because at the end of the day, the stock market is a reflection of earnings 6 months to 12 months into the future. So if we're down 11%, hey, our ears should be perked up, our minds should be wondering, what are the next steps we should take to protect our investments and ensure that they don't go down the tube and we lose all our progress? Unfortunately, the government is no longer a tailwind, but a headwind with the start of trade wars with China and other countries. Right now, it's all about protecting special interest groups and asserting one's dominance over others. And I think it's really going to be interesting to see whether Trump survives a full term if the stock market continues to languish. A lot of people I know and a lot of people that comment online basically can put up with his shenanigans so long as everybody's making money. But as soon as people stop making money, you're quickly going to see people turn. This trade war rhetoric is really disturbing, because everybody who's taken economics in college knows that it's like standing up to see a play at a basketball game. Once you stand up, someone behind you has to stand up, and then pretty soon the entire stadium is standing up because nobody can see better. Another thing, it's like rent control. The only people who benefit from rent control are the people who are already in these apartments. Well, that's fine. I mean, it's great to help these people. But what about the mass majority of other people who have to come into the city to rent an apartment? Now, suddenly, the supply of homes is now much lower than normal, which causes prices to rise. And landlords are going to be like, well, it's under rent control, so why are we going to bother fixing up homes and to provide, you know, maximum quality of living, because we just can't raise rents to market rate. And then you can see over the long term how rent control and other measures like trade war and all that hurts the long run economic output. Unfortunately, tech is also out of favor. You know, the FANG stocks, Facebook, Apple, Google, and so forth, they were leading the charge higher, but now they're out of favor because there's this massive data breach in the first quarter with Facebook. It's fake news king, right? Uber self-driving car killed a woman in Arizona. There was another Tesla crash when it was on autopilot with talks about negative Model 3 production. And then Trump is going after Amazon, stating, hey, you guys aren't paying your fair share of taxes and you're abusing the U.S. postal system, whatever. It is interesting that Amazon, which is a massive, massive company and that has made Jeff Bezos over $100 billionaire, paid zero corporate income taxes in 2017 due to various credits and so forth, while Financial Samurai has paid more than them. I mean, that's a head scratcher in and of itself. But hey, we all have a responsibility to minimize our tax liability. And this is probably the reason why the rich get richer, because they have smart ways to minimize this liability. With the S&P 500 down about 11% from its peak and having tested its bottom again in March, and it looks like again in April, the market's not that expensive anymore. It's trading at about 16.5 to 16.8 times 12-month forward earnings estimates. Now, prior to the sell-off, the S&P 500 was trading about 18.2 times expected earnings, which is pricey compared to its 10-year average of about 14.5 times. Therefore, even at 16.8 times forward PE, the S&P 500 is not cheap compared to historical averages. However, it's all relative to earnings growth, and we currently have earnings growth estimates, consensus estimates, up about 18.4% over the next four quarters. So you've therefore got a price to earnings to growth ratio, or a PEG ratio, of less than 1x, which historically meant that, you know, the market is fairly valued. The key question now is whether these earnings estimates are too high. Now, if they are too high, then the market is pricier than 16.8 times. But if they're too low, then there's more room to run if valuations stay the same. Now, the best way I see the stock market regaining its footing is by companies reporting solid first quarter 2018 earnings in the second quarter, and also providing good, comfortable, reassuring guidance for the second quarter, third quarter, and beyond. We've been whiplashed around by news and government rhetoric for several months now. Now, if the majority of companies in the S&P 500 can meet or beat earnings expectations, then we should expect the market to stabilize and move forward because the confidence in these earnings will increase. So as for me, I deployed a fourth of my remaining house sale proceeds at the beginning of the year, another fourth in the February meltdown, and then another fourth at the end of March when we hit a, quote, double bottom. And I say quote because who knows the future, but I know that we've reached the bottom again in March. And so I was like, well, markets seem reasonable, and I took a lot of risk off the table in 2017, so I'm just slowly putting the risk back in. So my stock market outlook at current levels is a 7 out of 10. I estimate at most 10% further downside, which would revert the valuation back to the mean of 14.5 times forward earnings, P, and at most about 15%, maybe 20% upside from here if everything falls into place. It's important that all of us look at all of our investments with a risk to reward ratio and then invest accordingly. All right, moving on to the bond market. With fiscal stimulus and tax cuts, the market suddenly decided that such moves would be highly inflationary. Bonds sold off as a result, causing bond yields to rise and stocks to fall. The rise in bond yields really was the trigger for the stock market collapse in February. You saw the bond yield, the 10-year bond yield specifically, go from around 2.45% all the way up to 2.94% on February 21st. But thankfully, the yields have since come down to around 2.75% with all the turmoil that's going on in the stock market. So always remember, when you're investing, it's always yin and yang. Nothing is really in a vacuum. When there is euphoria in the stock market, people tend to sell bonds because they don't need the comfort and the safety of bonds. And then when there's a lot of fear, people tend to sell risk assets like stocks and go into lower volatility bonds just so they don't lose all their money. Now, although the aggregate bond market is down about 1.2% for the year, that's better than being down 3-4% in the S&P 500. We might be in a situation this year where which asset classes loses us the least. In other words, everything is expensive or at least not cheap, and this could be a race to preserve capital, and that winner will obviously be cash if everything goes down. But it's still too early to tell. Even if bonds end up down 2% for the year, you're still going to make about 0.75% if the yield is 2.75%. So never forget the coupon. I'm sticking with my belief that the 10-year bond yield will not breach 3% for the year. Now, we came very close, right, at 2.94% on February 21st. But even if we do breach 3%, it's not going to be for very long because, again, everything is yin-yang. If the 10-year bond yield is at 3%, then investors are going to think, well, maybe getting a 3% risk-free rate of return is not bad, and then people are going to be selling stocks. Or maybe people will think, well, now that interest rates are higher, the returns required need to be higher, and valuations just aren't cutting it for me right now. So you just never really know exactly what's going to happen, but if there is a 3% or higher 10-year yield, I think there's going to be a lot more headwinds for the stock market. And also, if the Fed continues to raise the Fed funds rate, which is the shortest short end of the curve, then what you're going to see is a flattening of the yield curve. And if you look at the past and you look at the chart that I posted in my article, you'll see that a flattening yield curve portends to a recession. So please be aware, if the Fed doesn't budge and continues to hike rates while the 10-year yield doesn't go up, you're going to see a massive flattening. Now, I know that the Fed is not stupid. They don't want a recession because their main goal is to keep inflation at around 2% for the year and keep the natural unemployment rate as low as possible, which is probably around 3.5-4.5%. So I bought some California muni bonds and some longer-term treasury ETFs at the end of February after the 10-year broke 2.9%, and I'm going to continue doing that if it's over 2.9%, and especially at 3%. A 3% muni bond yield is equivalent to about 4.3% gross yield if you have a 30% effective tax rate, which I have. At 4% gross yield, that has always been my post-work retirement target return. So I'm really, really comfortable with that. So my bond market outlook at current levels is a 6 out of 10. I see 1 to 2% downside and 3 to 4% upside. So that's actually a really good risk-reward ratio, but it's not going to make you a lot of money. It's more about capital preservation. And when the 10-year yield was at 2.94%, I was more like an 8, 8.5 out of 10. But we're just going to have to wait and see. Now moving on to real estate. The good thing about global uncertainty is that investors seek the shelter of bonds, thereby keeping interest rates capped or lower. Now, with the 10-year bond yield coming off its highs, the real estate market is getting somewhat of a reprieve and is not getting squeezed as hard as it could. That said, we're still about 45 to 50 basis points higher than we were in December 2017, so debt servicing is more expensive. I continue to be very cautious about expensive coastal city real estate. Maybe this has something to do with my bias for selling property in 2017, but I'm still long my primary residence and a rental property in San Francisco, as well as a vacation property in Lake Tahoe and some assets in Honolulu. Unless you're super bearish about your career prospects, like you know you're going to get that promotion, unless you know you're going to get that big guaranteed bonus, or you have a massive liquidity event such as, I don't know, Dropbox going IPO and you suddenly have another $1 to $2 million in cash, or unless you have at least 30% of the value of the house you want to buy in cash, which makes up 20% down payment and another 10% plus cash buffer, I really wouldn't be buying coastal city real estate at this time. You know, we've had 9-year recovery. We've gone up massively since 2012, and it just isn't wise, in my opinion, to get levered into buying an asset at all-time highs. You've got to pay attention to rents, and rents are clearly coming down in many of the largest cities. For example, in Chicago, rents are down 28% from its record high in September 2015. In Honolulu, rents are down 25% from January 15's record high. Washington, D.C., rents are down 16.4% from their August 2017 high. What's going on there? In San Francisco, rents are down 10% from its October 2015 high. And I clearly remember rents being very weak, the rental market being very weak in the summer of 2017 because of a huge influx of new condos into the market. So Seattle is the same thing. There's tons of supply now, more than ever so in the history of its construction. And that is going to slowly work its way up. Actually, quickly work its way through the market, and it's going to provide people who want to live in your city many, many different alternatives. At the end of the day, real estate also trades on rent multiples, earnings multiples. So if you do need to buy a property because, let's say, you have a precious little one on the way and you don't want to get kicked out by a landlord for the next 5 to 10 years, you need to be very, very prudent when you're buying. Basically, look at the price from the record month minus the rental price change since that record time period. So in other words, if you're planning to buy a 2-bedroom apartment in Honolulu this year, look up what the price of a comparable apartment was in January 2015 and then subtract 25% to give you a good idea of how much you should be paying. You shouldn't be paying, you know, 25%, 50% more when the rents are going the other way. And this is very important exercise for everybody to perform before taking on leverage. You really don't want massive leverage if the market rolls over. Now is the time to be picky and negotiate and not have the winner's curse be the foolish winner of a manic bidding war, which I'm still seeing here in San Francisco. And you just have to be and run the numbers. Just look at what the stock market is indicating to all of us. Again, the stock market is a reflection of earnings 6 months to 24 months perhaps in the future. So if the stock market is down 11%, it's telling us that, hey, maybe things aren't as secure and rosy as we think they are. So take heed, folks. There are signs everywhere that are telling us, hey, slow things down a little bit. I think geo-arbitrage within the United States and around the world is going to be a multi-decade trend, which is why I'm investing in the heartland of America, where valuations are so much cheaper and net rental yields are so much higher than expensive coastal cities. So for the housing outlook for expensive coastal cities, I'm going to give it about a 3 or 4 out of 10. I think we're in the last innings. And for the housing market for non-coastal cities, more like a 7 to 8. However, everything kind of starts from the top and then puts pricing pressure down. So you still have more room to run, I think, in the heartland, but eventually their time is going to pass as well. Finally, let's talk about alternative investments here. Now, even though bonds are down 1.2%, the stock market is down 3 to 4%, and the real estate market, at least rentals-wise, is fading. You know, there's one asset class that struggled the most, and that's cryptocurrencies. It was absolute carnage in this space. You know, names like Bitcoin, Ripple are down 50% or more. So don't feel bad if you're down single digits. And this carnage is a great reminder that you should never invest more than you can afford to lose, and also to be disciplined in terms of your exposure to alternative investments, especially crazy high volatility, unproven ones like cryptocurrencies. For me, I keep alternative exposure to no more than 10% of my net worth, and I think that should be the same for you, but it's up to you in terms of your risk tolerance. For me, my risk tolerance is kind of in the middle to conservative now that I don't have a job. One interesting note, I did have a long conversation about cryptos with a multi-billionaire a couple weeks ago. This guy has a massive company you've all heard of and employs thousands and thousands and thousands of people and has thousands and thousands of customers. And his bottom line is he's bearish on cryptos because there's going to be an endless new supply of new cryptos, partially because his company will easily enable all his customers to create their own. And we're talking about thousands of customers, right? Companies that are customers, and therefore perhaps hundreds of thousands or millions of employees who are going to create their own cryptos. So maybe you'll have a financial samurai cryptocurrency one day, thanks to him. Elsewhere, I was surprised to get $2,623 from Realty Shares in February, since I've been only modeling about $9,600 for the entire year in 2018 passive income estimates. I haven't received any notification yet for March, but once I do, I'll update that. And at the moment, it looks like investing $300,000 in real estate crowdfunding in December 2017 is the right choice. I've got a total of 17 different investments, the large majority of which I like. Let's say 14 of them I like, two of them are like, and then one, not so much, which is this investment I wrote about in a Las Vegas multi-property deal. But it's going to take years, probably 2 to 5 years, to see how well they do, because all of the deals are equity deals. I'm personally modeling an 8% IRR over a 5-year investment time horizon instead of a 15% IRR, which is kind of the average of all the 17 deals I've invested in. So if I can get an 8% IRR with total passive income, I'm happy. I'm really happy because San Francisco real estate was giving me a 2.5% cap rate, and maybe it grows by 3%. So in other words, it's only going to give me a 5.5% return if I stayed in San Francisco real estate while having to deal with pain in the butt tenants and paying massive property taxes, which just didn't feel right. So in conclusion, I want everybody to know that risk control is paramount in 2018. You must go through your net worth asset allocation and do an honest assessment of your risk exposure. Don't be caught with your pants down at a highway rest stop. You know what happens, right? Predators come out and say, "Hey, how are you doing?" So long as you know how your money is being allocated and you have a plan for what to do in different scenarios, you're going to go through life with much less financial stress and much more reward. Take stock of your cash balance so you know that you can survive during a downturn or have enough dry powder to take advantage of any further pullbacks in the stock market, real estate market, bond market, or whatever it is that you care about the most. Thanks so much, everybody. Stay safe and invest wisely.